And good morning. It's going to be a beautiful day outside. We might as well take advantage of it. Last week, I talked about something that I thought was so interesting, and of course, this is probably most relevant to men. But the study that I looked at, when it comes to how do we get the body to heal, what do we do to improve the health of the prostate? Women don't have prostates, you get that. But it was talking about vitamin D3 levels. If we say that vitamin D3 is a vitamin, it's a nutrient, yeah, it is. And the human body requires a certain amount of it to function optimally. And I think you kind of get that. Sometimes I'll say the phrase, we're looking for the Goldilocks just right amount. But in the study that I took a look at last week, it showed that it could positively affect what's called your PSA levels, prostate-specific antigen. Well, lo and behold, this week I kind of stumbled across another one. I wish I could tell you that I'm super brilliant in doing research, but sometimes the more interesting ones are the ones I kind of stumble upon. I go, wait a second, that kind of goes hand in glove with what I talked about last week. Well, this one is, this first start of the program, I guess you could say, is for men. But you know what? If you were really a clever girl or a woman and you said, okay, I know he's talking about the prostate, but I wonder if there may be a similar benefit toward the breast tissue, the uterus, the ovaries. And I guess you could probably build the case that whatever affects the prostate in a negative way in a man is probably going to affect the uterus or the ovaries in a negative way in a female. So I think there's some correlation here. Here's the title of the article. It comes from the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, which means if you're going to see an endocrinologist, which is, you know, a hormone expert, so they tend to take care of problems related to things like thyroid, pituitary, adrenal gland, pancreas. So some of the conditions you might look at might be Hashimoto's of the thyroid, that's an autoimmune disease, or if somebody has type 1 or type 2 diabetes, that would be the physician that you get referred to because of their great expertise when it comes to the expression of hormones. So if you have glands, and we all do, that's where your hormones are made. So here's the title of the article. I mean, you can probably talk to your endocrinologist about this, and they'll say, oh, of course, I've already read that. I'm an endocrinologist. You know, I'm just teasing about that. Okay, the article, this is what it says right here. It's kind of long, but let me read it to you. Vitamin D3 supplementation at 4,000 international units per day for 1 year results in a decrease of positive cores at repeat biopsy in subjects with low-risk prostate cancer under surveillance. Oh, so that's the article, is it? Okay. Well, here's a study right here. I'm just going to give you the nuts and bolts takeaway that I could, extract from this great article. So if you have a man in your life, if you have a father, and you do, you should show him great respect by getting him this article or this information. Or he could probably go, since I'm recording this program right now, all he has to do is just go back to the archives for today's date and listen to it himself. Then he can decide if there's something he wants to do to help himself. I don't think in terms of people wanting to harm themselves, but every so often I come across people, they totally will reject everything good and they seem to have an affinity for everything bad. But that's not my problem, and that's not your problem. People make their own choices and their own decisions, right? Here's the study right here. David Marshall, an oncologist. You know what that is, don't you? That's a cancer doctor. He's at the Medical University of South Carolina. What he did was he gave 44 men that had early prostate cancer. So most likely, if they gave them a Gleason score, probably would have been around 6 or somewhere around there. That would be the mildest expression of cancer. And if a Gleason score was like 10, well, you know, I'm not trying to be negative on a Saturday morning, but not good, okay? So he gave 44 men with early prostate cancer. So they'd been diagnosed with cancer, you know, upon biopsy. They put a needle in the prostate. And when they look at it, they say that's not a normal cell. That's a cancer cell. 4,000 IUs of vitamin D3 every day for a year. It says here that Marshall used vitamin D3 in a gel capsule, like a little gel cap. I'm sure you've seen those. It says the vitamin D3 was dissolved in vegetable oil. I looked. The study did not say what the vegetable oil was. Maybe it was safflower oil. Maybe it was olive oil. I doubt it, but I'm guessing sunflower, safflower, something like that. It said the men had a PSA of 10 or lower to be in this study, and they had a Gleason score of 6. So that means they had this way of kind of staging or grading the cancer they have. It's like anything else. They're just using the Gleason score to try to determine, is this a mild case of cancer? Or if you go to the other far end of the spectrum, it'd be like a severe form of cancer. Okay? So in order to be in the study, they had a low Gleason score of 6, and their PSA had to be either 10 or lower. I think you and I would agree, you don't want a PSA of 10. You just don't. So it says the clinical stage of their cancer was T1C or T2A. I didn't look that up, so I couldn't tell you what that means. It says the latter means that cancer has been found in the biopsy of the prostate, but the cancer, it's still small. There's no sign of metastasis yet. That means it hasn't spread from the prostate, say, to the liver, the lung, the brain, the bone, you know, something like that. So it hadn't spread yet. So what Marshall did was he gave these men 4,000 IUs of vitamin D3 for a year. I would say that's a pretty cool study. A lot of the studies that I read, if they only do it for a short period of time, I think, well, what would happen if they did it longer? Meaning, if they saw some positive response in some men that couldn't be explained otherwise, I think, well, why don't they do it longer to see what would happen long term? But this is done for a year, so I'm thinking, man, I like this one. So what Marshall did was he compared the people, the study participants, okay, the ones that took the vitamin D3, 4,000 IUs. There's a lot of physicians and nurses that will freak out over 4,000 IUs. That's part of the reason I'm telling this also. You got nothing to worry about. We'll get to that momentarily. So what he did was he compared men that had prostate cancer with other men that had prostate cancer, but one took the vitamin D3 and one took the placebo, which the placebo didn't have anything in it. There was no vitamin D3. Okay, so Dr. Marshall, he knows that during the trial, the study participants did better than the control group. And what the oncologist looked at was the number of tumors that showed up in the biopsies during the year, and they also used that to come up with a Gleason score. So I'm going to cut to the chase right here. The graph that I'm looking at, you can't see it, but I'm going to describe it to you. It's listed as the percentage of the subjects that had with progression on a follow-up biopsy or a repeated biopsy. So you're with me on that. Okay, so the control group, man, they had a much higher level. It looks to me like it's about 64-65% progression of cancer. That means they found more cancer. Now, those that took vitamin D3, that was about 32%. I think that's significant. Now, this is the second category on the graph. They looked at what's the percentage of these subjects in these two groups that actually had improvement on a repeated biopsy. And so, to me, this one is very interesting. When you say improvement, what they're showing is they're showing that cancer actually begins to disappear for whatever reason. If you want to call that a person going into remission, you're going from, they can measure the cancer, they can count it, they can look at it, but if they do a follow-up biopsy, they go, What is the deal? It's like it's going away. And so, would you imagine those that didn't take any vitamin D, it was about 20% of them, they saw some improvement. And for all I know, human beings, they like to help themselves sometimes. Maybe they did something that was good. Maybe they changed their diet or they started walking. But they showed specifically those in the study group that took the vitamin D3, there was like about a 55% improvement, meaning cancer went away. So listen to this right here. I'm just quoting Dr. Marshall. In the men that received the vitamin D3, the number of biopsies that were positive for prostate cancer decreased over the year. Now, I don't know, how are you supposed to interpret that? To me, that is nothing but positive. Let me read that one more time. So I want this to etch into my heart and my mind because I want to be able to remember this. The men that took the vitamin D3 at 4,000 units a day for a year, the number of biopsies that were positive, showing that it did have cancer, they decreased. You know what? I don't know. Can I say that cancer was cured? Is that wrong to say? Okay, if it is, you can call me and correct me in saying, no, you can't cure it. Well, this study shows otherwise. How else are you supposed to determine or look at this? If you had cancer, but now you don't have cancer, doesn't that mean it was cured or you're healed? Now, it said in the control group, those were the ones that had no vitamin D3, the number of positive biopsies increased, which means cancer was a growing. Okay? Now, this is just my opinion. I think there's a certain amount of vitamin D3 that a human being needs to keep their skeletal system or their bones in good working order. So, you probably know what I'm fixing to say, but if you lack vitamin D3, couldn't you experience soft, brittle bones? If you want to call that osteopenia, if you want to call it osteoporosis, okay, so it's not good. The bones are breaking down faster than the ability of your body to repair them. That would be what you see with low vitamin D. So vitamin D3, it plays a role in trying to keep your body in great working order. Now, in my mind, the more that I read articles like this, and the one that I read the week before, and other studies that I've looked at, I'm starting to believe that maybe we're all underperforming on vitamin D3. And I guess what I really want to say is, maybe there's a certain level of vitamin D3 that if you give it above and beyond the amount that would be required just to keep your bones from breaking down or having a fracture, maybe there's this Goldilocks just right dose or amount that actually supercharges your immune system. Meaning, you've got to reach that certain threshold, you know, the just right amount of vitamin D3 for it to start flipping on those switches in a positive way that helps your immune system rise to the occasion and start defeating cancer cells. I mean, I'm not trying to read too much into this, but that's what I start thinking about when I read studies like this. And remember, this was written to endocrinologists. Because vitamin D3 probably acts more like a hormone than anything else. So in my mind, this is evidence that cancer could be reversed just with vitamin D3. I'm not going to read all that to you. No, that's just too much information. So what I'm going to... let me read this right here. Just in case you're scared, some people are. Some people are just terrified when they hear these things. They have this fear that a vitamin is going to kill them somehow. I wonder who they've had tell them that you'll die if you get a vitamin. Well, I know the answer, and you probably do too, but let's just say some people have no problem the moment they find that you're taking vitamin D3. They will tell you it will kill you. And I'm going, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. Here's what Dr. Marshall said. And he's an oncologist, a cancer doctor. Okay? Vitamin D3 supplementation had no effects, as far as the researchers could determine. There's no side effects. And they followed them for a year. Now, supplementation did, of course. They were able to determine on a blood test that vitamin D3 levels, they did increase. But they never reached any level that would cause any of the physicians of the study to worry about toxicity. Okay, are you with me on that? See, if somebody walked in my door and they said, okay, I just had my vitamin D3 levels tested, and it says they're at 48. That's great, isn't it? Well, I'm going to question that, because that may not be great. That may be closer to the bare minimum to keep your bones from breaking. So what I'm saying is, what if there's a level of vitamin D3 that works so well with your DNA or your genetic code that all of a sudden other systems in your body, like your immune system, could actually work better? So maybe the upper limit's going to be starting at 70, maybe to the number 105. Maybe you should think about that. Go back and look at your blood test. They go on to say, they're looking at the Endocrine Society guidelines. They're saying they need to change. And I'll just cut to the chase. They're saying that maybe 10,000 units a day is going to come a whole lot closer to helping the human body function much better. I mean, whoever's listening this morning, this program is Health Essentials. I don't really know of anybody that would make the choice to watch their body deteriorate horribly, especially if there was something simple that could be done. So when I read the study this morning about men that took 4,000 units of vitamin D, or international units, excuse me, of vitamin D3 a day for 1 year, and all of a sudden prostate cancer starts disappearing and going away, what am I supposed to do with that information? I think it's very, very good. Okay, the number here at the radio station is 903-589-8507. So if you're listening this morning, maybe you're on your computer on kbjs.org and you're listening, the correct number, somebody's trying to call the other line. No, don't. The only number that I can really take on the air is 903-589-8507. They're using the older number, and I get that. So the new number is 903-589-8507. Okay, I came across another article. Now, I don't know what you think about that first one I read to you about vitamin D3, but if you're sitting on the other end of the radio or on your cell phone or computer, maybe this would be room to, reflect on what's going on. You know, it's in your best interest. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good.
You'll have to turn your radio off.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I was just diagnosed with lung cancer, metastatic lung cancer, and it went up to my brain, and I had brain surgery, and they removed a big old tumor. I've been reading reports on ivermectin.
Yeah.
About for cancer, and I was curious about that.
Do you mind if I tell you what I read last week?
Okay.
If I say last week, that could have been 2 weeks ago. So I'm always not right on the timeline. This buddy of mine sent me this article about this older gentleman that might have been his upper 80s that had cancer growing on his ear. Are you with me on that?
Yes.
In the article, it said his daughter sent him, what is the name of the drug? It's like Sola, man, I could look it up. Maybe I've got it on my phone still. But there's a cream. All the cream is just ivermectin in the delivery system of a cream. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if you rub the cream, what the man did was the daughter sent him 4 tubes of ivermectin cream. It may be called Solatin. That may be the name of the drug. Okay. So it's just ivermectin in the cream form, and what the old man did was he rubbed it directly on the cancer multiple times a day. I'm assuming that the little tubes are small. They're not huge because it said he went through three. But at the one-month follow-up visit, when he went back to the dermatologist for ear cancer, the cancer had completely dissolved and resolved, and all he applied was the ivermectin to it.
Wow.
So can I just give you one more side point, and then we'll just kind of go through what you're talking about?
Okay.
You know that the skin is a living, breathing organ, don't you?
Yes.
Maybe the largest organ in the body, but your skin, it's going to drink up whatever you put on top of it. So if you said, I don't want to put, you know, Vaseline intensive care on my face because it's got chemicals in it. But if you wanted to treat your skin to a treat, you might say, well, what about coconut oil on my skin as like a lubricant? Or what about unfiltered extra virgin olive oil that might have some chlorophyll and some carotenes? So whatever you apply to your skin, it's going to drink it up. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So the ivermectin, I don't have any problem considering that it was able to be well absorbed into the skin cancer. Now, in this article, and I haven't been able to read all of it, it blew my mind, because let me tell you what it said. It said this is not just for squamous cell carcinoma or basal cell carcinoma, but they said for melanomas also, and that just literally blew my mind. I have not heard of that before. But I think I'm open-minded when it comes to healing, meaning if it ain't toxic and it's not going to destroy somebody and it's actually going to help defeat the cancer without, you know, causing a massive disfiguration of... I mean, who wants their ear cut off? I don't.
No.
And so in this... And now, I have not been able to read any studies about ivermectin and melanoma, so I'm just mentioning that. I'm not trying to overpromise anything to anybody, but man, did I think that was so good to read. I was so excited to read that. That was a buddy of mine that sent that article to me. His initials are JC, and that would not be Jesus Christ. That is not his name. But when he sent that to me, I thought, man, that's good. Now, personally, I think that's very worthy of some thought, reflection, and consideration. Do you think so also?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so let's go back to your question. So, obviously, I can't make any recommendations for a prescription drug, but what I would say is this. I've had more people give me feedback about a dose called 24 milligrams of ivermectin. I'm not recommending that, but I'm just repeating what other people have told me that they've used before.
Okay.
And so, I'm sorry, I may not be answering your question. Could you repeat your question or tell me what you're after or add a comment?
I'm curious about ivermectin because I was just diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer that's metastatic and it traveled to my brain, and I just had brain surgery to remove a tumor.
Yes, ma'am.
They're supposed to be doing a PET scan Tuesday, weather permitting. I can get there.
Okay, so I think there's lots of things you can look at, but there's something about... Can I just say these things kind of loosely, because I'm not trying to come across like I really know everything about these things, because I don't. I have probably 4 books on ivermectin, and I still have more to learn. Is that okay if I say that?
Yeah.
But I think there's something... Now, to the best of my knowledge, ivermectin was first discovered in Japan by soil scientists. I think it was an organism that naturally occurs in the soil of Japan called Streptomyces. If I'm wrong about that, I can correct that. But it gives off this compound that's been labeled ivermectin. And so, for example, in the year 2014, I believe that ivermectin was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize because they gave ivermectin to all these millions of people that had drug-resistant malaria. I don't know if you know much about malaria, but I can tell you this. I'm pretty sure you don't want it, and I sure don't want it. I don't want to get a parasite in my blood.
Yeah, I remember reading something about malaria and ivermectin.
But what it did was malaria won the Nobel Prize because all of a sudden all these people that are suffering horribly with malaria that's taken their lives from them, they're completely healed once they give them ivermectin. So that's just one example. But there's something about ivermectin that seems to completely interfere with the ability of cancer cells to divide and replicate and grow. Now, I'm not saying that to overpromise anything, so I think it's worth consideration. And that's what you're saying too, right? So
my oncologist said that it was experimental, and if I wanted to try it, go ahead on top of all the other treatments. But I haven't had any treatments yet.
They're okay. Did the oncologist offer to prescribe the ivermectin for you?
No.
Oh, but he said go ahead and try it? Wait, you broke up a little bit. What'd you say again?
I'm losing you.
Well, I can hear you now.
Okay.
So the oncologist said you can go ahead and try it as an experiment, but I'm not going to prescribe it to you. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm in town. I'm in a spot with no cell service.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, you can call back.
Just put you on the radio.
I'm sorry. I just couldn't hear you. So I didn't mean to hang up on you on purpose. Well, I guess I did. I didn't do it intentionally to be mean. Yeah, just when you get a stronger signal, call back. But there's so from what I could understand that you're saying, the oncologist said, yeah, okay, you can try it as an experiment. But he didn't really prescribe it for you to help you that way, which if the oncologist wanted to, I guess they could have. I don't know. Am I wrong about that? Maybe they have a code that says they can't prescribe anything like that for cancer because it's not a proven cancer treatment. Maybe it's as simple as that. So what you're left with is, how do I procure it? How do I get my hands on it? What do I do with it? Now, this is me maybe going in a slightly different direction. I'm sure you have read that cancer cells don't operate anywhere like a normal cell would. During the daytime, a normal cell in the human body, it's going to take oxygen, you know, from what you breathe in. I think we're all going to agree this morning that oxygen is one of the most precious elements in all the universe. You can't live very long without oxygen. I don't know, how long could your body survive without oxygen? 5 minutes without breathing? I don't know. I'm not going to try it today, by the way. There's some people, maybe 30 seconds. Anyway, so during the daytime, you've got to take oxygen and most likely glucose during the waking hours because you're eating breakfast, lunch, and supper. Does that make sense? But you take the oxygen and the glucose, and they go into the mitochondria in your cells, and that's where energy production takes place. Are you with me on that? But at nighttime, let's just say that you have your very last meal at 5 o'clock in the evening. You want to call it your dinner or supper. That's fine. But about 3.5 hours after you eat your 5 o'clock evening meal, if you're not snacking or drinking anything with sugar in it, your body runs out of glucose. Or at least it says, you know what, we're getting low on glucose. Maybe we should switch over to a different form of fuel. And that different form of fuel is going to be called fat, F-A-T. So the mitochondria, they are designed to burn two different forms of fuel, and they just do this naturally. This is God's, or if I say Jesus' grand design that I can't even wrap my head around. How did he come up with this? But our Creator made all this. So all night long when you're asleep, what's supposed to happen is your body just naturally switches over to burning fat for fuel, okay? Now, you're probably asking the question, why am I bringing that up? Because I want to talk about cancer cells for a moment. That's called aerobic respiration. You breathe oxygen, you take glucose or fat, you make energy, right? The cell is able to live and grow. Now, a cancer cell doesn't do that. It doesn't use oxygen and glucose or fat the way that we do, that normal cells do. No, it has to ferment sugar. And the problem is the fermentation process, it gives off all this lactic acid. And the lactic acid, when it builds up, it kind of surrounds the, cancerous tumor cells. All that lactic acid builds up around the tumor. And what it does is it kind of acts like a cloaking device where your immune system can't really penetrate the lactic acid. So one of the byproducts of fermentation is giving off lactic acid. Maybe my example should be sweet milk compared to sour milk or buttermilk. My mother used to love buttermilk. So did my father. But then again, they were raised on it. If you were raised on buttermilk and liver and onions, you would like it too. But since you weren't, you probably don't. Or how maybe yogurt would turn sour. Or kefir would turn sour. Does that make sense? And so the point that I'm trying to get to is we've got to do whatever we can to make it very, very hard for cancer cells or a tumor. We want to screw up their metabolism, which means we don't want to give them sugar. All right? So you make it very hard or harder for cancer cells to thrive if you deprive them of their favorite source of nutrition. All right, does that make sense? So that's one thing. So it doesn't take a genius to understand maybe I should not be drinking milkshakes all day long, or maybe I shouldn't be eating candy bars all day long, or Coca-Cola, just fill in the blank, junk food. Hey, we live in America. That means anybody, even if you're poor, could probably go buy like a box of Little Debbie, you know, cakes, and they could eat those. But that's just pure sugar. Now, so you understand the gist here. All I'm doing is I'm just trying to talk you into eating real food that would actually support the normal, healthy tissues of your body. And at the same time, we're trying to kind of choke out or starve out the cancer cells. So the next thing is this right here. You look at the studies on who's going to have cancer, and so I'm not trying to be mean to anyone that's listening, but if you smoke cigarettes every single day, you're actually lending yourself toward, or you're aiming toward cancer, because that depletes your oxygen levels. Does that make sense? So if a person is super sedentary, do they tend to have more cancer than somebody that's very active and they can actually breathe more, get more oxygen because they get exercise? They just move their body more. Does that make sense? So we're trying to flip the switch on that to make it possible. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
That you'll be able to help me.
I'm going to try.
I have been experiencing excruciating pain around under my breast. There's a wide band of pain that goes all the way around, and it radiates to the back, and there's a tightening and a pulling. The pain also goes down my left side as well.
Well, what's your best guess?
I've had tests done, and there was an MRI done, and I was told that it is potentially neuropathy, and maybe degenerative. And the doctor was Russian and said he would come back and explain and go in.
You don't mean he's from Russia. You just mean he was moving too fast to give you lots of tension, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's not normally him. I also,
well, that is typical of the KGB. They do everything fast. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Go ahead.
That's okay. I love when you inject humor. I've also been experiencing shortness of breath, which affects my energy, and this has been going on for quite some time, over a month and a half.
Can you think of any one situation or circumstance that could have led to this?
Doctor, it came out of nowhere.
Okay.
Out of absolutely nowhere.
Had you been sick with a cough of any kind prior to it?
No. Let me also mention that I had some discomfort, extreme discomfort in the lower extremity, like my lower abdomen as well.
Well, there's a difference between lower extremity and lower abdomen. Those are two different things.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I just want to make sure.
I should not have used the word extremity. I mean lower abdomen.
Okay, I'm with you. I just wanted to make sure I could follow you.
That, like down in the female region. I don't know if that just complicated it,
well,
but anyway.
No, they may be two separate issues. They could be.
Yeah, and I couldn't go to the bathroom. For over
okay.
a month, I couldn't go to the bathroom.
You mean as far as you're being able to urinate or being able to have a bowel movement?
Bowel movement.
Okay.
Did
you have constipation before all this started?
This all came at the same time.
Okay.
It all seemed to come at the same time. My greatest concern, of course, not being able to go to the bathroom had me extremely concerned, but this excruciating pain and affecting my ability to breathe normally has been paramount.
Ma'am, how do I know that you're just not backed up and just full of a lot of poop?
Well, they did a colonoscopy. They prepped me for it and gave me the Go Lightly to drink.
Yes, ma'am.
And cleared my system. They did it a couple weeks before, and it was
okay.
Unsuccessful. Nothing moved. This time it did. The colonoscopy showed that everything was okay.
Okay, so once they completely cleaned you out, all the discomfort did not go away. Is that correct?
It did not.
Okay, I'm with you, but it doesn't hurt to ask.
I want you to. That's exactly why I'm calling you. That's exactly why I'm calling you, because I know that you'll help me to get to the bottom of this and do it as holistically and naturally as possible. I don't believe that there's nothing other than needles and those. I believe that there has to be some other road for me to travel.
What does a typical day look like for you each day? What do you do all day long?
I'm spending 23 hours a day in the bed, doctor. 23 hours a day in the bed.
Is that for the last month and a half?
Yes.
Does that mean prior to a month and a half ago, you were up and moving all day long and very active?
I'm in a wheelchair, but I'm still active.
It's kind of an important detail.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's all right.
But I am very active. I stand up. I do.
Now, what do you mean? So you're not paralyzed, is that right?
No, I don't have normal use of my left side, which means my arm is pinned down.
Did you have a stroke?
No, I was hit by. I went to cross the road.
Oh,
I
no.
looked to the right, and then I went before I could turn to the left. I was hit by a commercial truck. And I was thrown up in the air, flipped over, and came down on my left side.
Oh, that's horrible.
So this is
due to like a traumatic motor vehicle accident.
Right. But
that's probably an understatement.
As God would have it, it's been a blessing in many respects because it's given me a different perspective upon certain things. I've made time to do things that I didn't have time for before. I was running three businesses and raising two children and a sick husband. I didn't know my name unless someone called it.
That means you had seven full-time jobs.
Yes. Officer in the PTA, in charge of the fundraising at both of the kids' schools. Extremely busy and missing out on a lot of things. As I said, being
if you came to my church, you could probably have your kids start selling Diet Cokes, and you'd probably find plenty of people to buy them. Okay, so what is the most important thing that you want to address today?
Right now, I really, really want to address this excruciating pain around my middle.
Okay, so here's what I can't do on the radio, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway. The diaphragm muscle itself is one of the most interesting muscles of all time, because what it's supposed to do is when you're able to breathe deeply, your diaphragm actually contracts and it pushes down very firmly upon the liver, the gallbladder, the spleen, the stomach, small intestine, colon, so it's able to massage it. And that actually plays a powerful role in how efficiently somebody eliminates. So one thing that I may have you do as a simple experiment is go to YouTube and just type in deep breathing exercises to improve diaphragm function. Now, the other thing that I would look at if I felt of it is I'd feel those ribs, because if you have a rib out of place, that means it hurts all the time. But they probably took an x-ray to determine if you had a broken rib or something.
Well, it's really interesting that you mention that, because the pain on the rib is something that I've tried everybody to pay attention to. It doesn't feel normal.
Well, then that's enough to go with right there.
And I keep telling them, please come and touch and see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and that's easy to do, too.
And oh, this is tender. Yes,
well,
it's tender.
Well, now you know why I don't trust Russian doctors from the KGB. They're not thorough.
Oh, gosh.
So what you're doing is, why don't you go to a chiropractor and let them see if you have a rib out of place. That would be one simple thing. I'm not trying to tell you that covers everything. What I'm into when it comes to your situation, what do we do to restore the function of your body to where you can have a comfortable life and you can function? I mean, could you get on the floor and start doing stretching exercises? Could you do exercises for your hips and your pelvis and your ribs?
Yes.
You could actually go to YouTube right now and you could type in, what are the basic exercises to stretch my spine and ribs? And you could watch it, because you're a highly visual person. You could start saying, I'm going to imitate that. I'm going to see if I can help myself. So if they do all these MRIs and they do all, and I'm just assuming here, they did blood work, are you telling me that nothing showed up at all that gave us any clue as to what's going on from all those tests?
There was one test the doctor told me that showed that the stool was completely backed up all the way, and supposedly now that's not the case, because I asked the doctor after the colonoscopy was done, was there any sign of residual bowel movement? And he said, let me tell you, if there had been anything in there, they would have not even administered the test.
Right. Well, the fact that the pain's wrapping all the way around the rib, following under the chest to the back, that's a rib issue right there until proven otherwise. So it could be that you just slept the wrong way and you have a rib out of place, and a chiropractor could probably push that back in place, and you might even get instant relief. But, I mean, if you want to have a miserable human being, have a rib pop out, and they're in misery until it gets popped back in.
He's saying that the MRI showed a thoracic. As a matter of
No, I don't doubt that at all. It may be that there's some degenerative wear and tear or osteoarthritis or bone spurs or narrowing of the disc, but that doesn't change what has to be done, because the whole goal is, what do we do to get you back to good, normal functioning? And I realize I'm always not great at explaining these things, but if you have a joint in your thoracic spine that's locked up, we're going to have to start doing therapies to improve that.
Okay. He said that he consulted with a thoracic doctor. The doctor wanted to do another MRI with imaging, and he told him no. She's had too much stuff going on there, and I don't want all of these tests to start affecting her kidneys.
Why is he bringing up the kidneys? I hadn't heard anything about that yet.
No, I think because...
Do you have kidney damage?
No, none at all. The kidneys are fine. The liver, the kidneys.
So
the kidneys.
He's just saying he didn't want the contrast in your arteries to affect the kidneys, right?
Exactly.
He's trying to
exercise preventative maintenance.
Well, what's his plan then?
So many tests done.
So what's his plan to reverse all this?
That's what I'm waiting to hear, and I said, I wanted to talk with you, because I asked him, what do we do? He said, well, there's pain management, there's needles.
Well,
and
I think the first order of business for you is trying to pinpoint where the problem's coming from. So I'm going to make this sound real, real simple. If the diaphragm is not working right, I would say, let's try to do some corrective breathing exercises. If it's because your thoracic spine, why don't we try some simple exercises that would target the healing and the repair of your thoracic spine? And I'm just making this next one up. If you had a rib that was giving off massive pain signals because it's out of place, why don't you get that put back in place? But in your situation, I would do everything that I can to find some reasonable way to improve the time that you spend in the wheelchair and get you out of the wheelchair as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, I want to encourage you, get your strength back. So, in the way that you do that, you do specific exercises that would restore the function of your toes and the arches of your feet and your ankles and your knees. I mean, surely you're with this because you know there's room for improvement. Actually, there's anybody that I can talk to right now that doesn't have room for improvement.
I agree. I understand. And I'm a very determined person. I've come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to walk again. I work on it constantly.
Well, you told me a while ago you could stand up.
Oh, yeah, I can stand up and I can take steps and I'll go in the kitchen and completely get out of the chair. I live alone, and I, you know, other than getting a ride someplace, I'm self-sufficient.
Well, let's use your strong force of will that God's given you to fight through this, but I've got to convince you to do all these things that you're not comfortable doing. That's the whole key.
The comfort doesn't matter, doctor.
Do you do any type of exercise routine day in, day out? Because you're in bed for 23 hours a day.
Since this has been going on, because
right.
I can't sit up because it hurts the middle. If I sit up, I have to lean over.
Well, what's the stop?
I have to lean over.
Well, you might have to get a second opinion.
Oh, my God. I've been in the hospital 3 times in the last...
Well, no. That's not what I meant. I meant go to somebody that has more of a hands-on approach that could actually... Because the order that we have to follow is, it makes sense to me that if we can pinpoint where the problem's coming from and find out what's the source of all your pain, now we've got a way through this, whether it's a nerve or a bone or a joint or a muscle. I mean, I'm kind of finding it hard to believe that it wouldn't be a combination of all the above from what you're describing to me.
Yeah.
But what do we do?
It all started together.
Yeah.
Same time. I mean, it's. I had no issues with going to the bathroom at all. And then all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, I'm noticing a day, then another day. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not going to the bathroom. Where is this waste going?
Have you ever done deep breathing exercises?
No.
Then you can start those today.
Really.
No, the answer is not really, not ever. So... Yeah. Just set your mind like flint that you're going to start fighting through that and doing those things. Then you can start, I mean, do you have one of those small rubber exercise balls? I think if you went to a website called Amazon.com, you could type in foot exercise ball. They look like a little rubber ball that's got little bitty bumps all over it. There was a study that was done that showed that drastically improved a person's balance that couldn't maintain their balance. Of course, we got to do this in steps, but you could start using that all day long while you're sitting in your chair. And then we can do leg exercises while you're sitting in your chair. And you can get small dumbbells and we could do those. But you might want to find out where this pain's coming from, so you need to go somewhere other than the emergency room. See, it used to be that the ER was a good place to go. I think those days may just about be over, and what I mean by that is they just do the bare minimum to make sure you're not going to die. But if you want help, you may have to go to a doctor that's actually going to spend a little bit more time with you and try to sort through all this.
Okay.
But the goal is more energy, more strength, better sleep, less pain, increasing the range of motion, improving the strength, improving your nervous system. Mm-hmm. But you're going to have to do that. We're going to have a plan.
I understand. Let me also mention that nothing works for the pain.
Of course nothing works for the pain.
The only thing that's worked is heating pads.
Well, that's encouraging. I'm encouraged then. So what would be the situation that heating pads would work? If the muscles are giving off massive pain signals, that's where a heating pad works. So I know there's a muscular component to this. For all I know, you've got the muscle spasm from hell and a big knot right by your spine that's just tormenting you.
Yeah.
Have you thought about going to a massage therapist for them to work that out?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, I just gave you an idea.
Yes, I knew you would.
Well, you can go to YouTube as soon as I get off, and there's nothing to prevent you from watching video after video after video of people in severe pain. You know what they do at these drug rehab programs? I've seen people and I've seen movie stars in wheelchairs saying, I will kill you if you try to get me out of this wheelchair. I'm in too much pain. I can't do it. And they'll usually have what's called a yoga practitioner. I'm not asking you to agree with everything. I'm just talking about stretching. And some of these, they're not funny, ha-ha, but it's like, oh my goodness. They'll just dump them out of their wheelchair onto the floor, and then what do they do next? They start, what the person does is, they try to lay on the floor and explain how much pain they're in, and they tell the yoga practitioner that there's no help for them, so they just leave them there until they're ready to cooperate and start doing what it takes to get out of pain. But I've seen them over and over again, those videos. After about an hour and a half, they're going, oh my goodness, I'm pain-free, the first time in my life. I'm going, well, look at what I had to go through, kicking and screaming to get there. So you can do all these things.
I know I can.
Of course you can.
I know I can.
There's nothing to stop you. So heat helps. That's very encouraging.
That's the only thing.
Well, it's not the only thing. I mean, do you want to call a massage therapist and say, could you take a look at my muscles and see if there's something that can be done? And they could do it.
I mean, it's the only thing that's worked thus far.
Yes, I knew that's what you meant.
Oh, okay. All right.
As much fentanyl that's coming over the border, I'm surprised the pizza delivery guy hadn't offered you some. I'm just joking. We don't want to do that.
No. Okay.
So you've got a ton of things that you can do, but it may start with you need to go to somebody that understands how to pinpoint where your problems are coming from. So which town do you live in?
Tyler.
Well, why don't you call a chiropractor or a massage therapist or a physical therapist or call one of these places that does stretching? There's a lot of places now that's all they do is they do stretching, and I found that's what you need. You've got to restore motion. Your goal is to get out of the wheelchair and start walking and moving with good integrity of your muscles and your joints. But if you don't get out of the wheelchair, you will deteriorate to the point where you'll be in bed the rest of your life. And I don't want to see that happen. I want to see you out of the bed.
No. No, and I haven't been in the bed until this situation arose. Very, very, very active. I go out, exercise. I go shopping.
Well, how long have you been in the wheelchair?
More than 10 years.
Okay, when you say go shopping, do you mean under the power of your own 2 feet walking and moving, or do you mean wheelchair?
Wheelchair, but I get up when I need to reach for things, or
of course.
I'm wheeling around. I don't get the electric scooter. I wheel around myself.
So the question is, what are we going to have to do to cause your body to grow brand new brain cells and new neurons and new nerves and arteries and veins? What are we going to have to do to strengthen all your joints where you can stand on your own? How do we grow brand new muscle? Because to me, that's the only answer to what you're telling me, is to get stronger. That's the only way through this. Which means I don't know enough about your situation, but if you can stand up to get something off a shelf, that I'm thinking we have a starting point, but I want you to be able to move under your own power without the wheelchair, if that's possible. Is that possible?
And I do. Yeah, I think I mentioned that I go in the kitchen and I'll get out of the chair and I'll just move around on my feet, my legs. Okay. You know, I have to hold on.
What do you think you would have to do? What do you think you would have to do to grow enough muscle where you could just stand super easy like a 2-year-old could? What would have to be done?
I do that. I do that.
Okay, then I don't. Evidently, I have no clear image of what's really going on. I really don't know what's going on here. So I haven't. Anyway, I wish I could be of more help to you, but I wish you the very best. But I would still stand pretty firm. There's going to be a lot of things that you can do that you haven't tried yet.
Okay.
But I enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for calling today.
I very much appreciate all the information that you've provided.
And who knows, maybe you can go to a chiropractor, maybe there'll be a rib and a joint out of place that they can fix pretty easily.
I believe that you very well could be correct. And I thank God that I came across your show. I've been listening, and I've told so many people about you.
Well, thank you.
And I will continue to, and it's
well, I've given you a few things to think about.
Yes, you have.
All right. Well, thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye. All right. If you learn, well, goodness, I just looked at the clock. We have, 3 minutes left? I don't know. You know how I began the program today? Talking about vitamin D3. Well, there's studies that show that severe chronic pain, that you got to look up the studies on that. They're amazing. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan, I'd like to follow up with what the lady was talking about a rib being out of place. That happens to me real often, and I have decided that I want to figure out what I can do to keep that from happening. And so one of the things I thought was I needed to strengthen my back and get my ligaments, muscles, whatever is happening.
Wait just a second. This is a revolutionary thought. This is great. keep going. Sorry for interrupting.
Well, I do the deep breathing because I have COPD, and so I do the deep breathing. But I have started going to exercise classes that we have here where I live.
Ma'am, you are one radical woman. What do you mean you're going to an exercise class? That's great.
Well,
evidently your doctor's not Russian.
No, in fact, I go to a very good chiropractor and he puts that rib back in place.
Oh, good.
And so if that lady that just called will go to a chiropractor, I think she'll find part of the answer.
Well, what do you think? You think she will?
Well, I hope so. I really do, because rib pain, rib being out is horrible.
Oh,
pain.
I know. You ain't kidding. Yeah. I've had that happen. I broke 2 ribs one time. It's brutal.
Oh, well, now my question is, what do I continue? What are some other things I can do? Or are there specific exercises for my back and ribs?
Yes, but can I tell you the very first thing that popped into my head?
Sure.
Okay, I know this is going to sound extreme, but just kind of hear me out here, and I'll make it fast because we're just about out of time. A long time ago, when British sailors crossed the oceans, you know, trying to plot trade routes and discover new lands and find new things to trade with, they developed a condition called scurvy. And scurvy would be where all the ligaments and tendons and joints would become very loose. Have you ever heard of that before?
Yes.
So all the old Indians, when they would kill a deer or an elk or a bear, the very first thing that the tribe would partake of would be the adrenal glands. They would cut it up, so if there was 14 people in the hunting party, they would each get a share of the adrenal glands of the animal. And that's how they prevented back pain. So this is just my quick opinion. When you have joints that don't stay in place, my first thought is the adrenal glands are underperforming. They're not as strong as they should be. And sometimes this can be just as easy as taking some adrenal extracts that maybe come from a calf right before they go to, you know, they leave this earth. That wasn't a good way of saying it. Unfortunately, think about the adrenal glands, and I'm all out of time today.
You run out of time every time I call.
That happens every time.